Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave, and I am here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And at this time around, we go into the election, a bit of commentary on what's happening now, the issues, how it affects crypto, what it means for crypto. And we also go to a bit in the world of native Bitcoin interoperability. We have on Gigathad, who is the co-founder of the El Dorado protocol, which is built on Thorchain. It's funny because I remember Thorchain back in 2020, 2021. And, they're a big topic. They kind of went away, but they've been building. And honestly, it's pretty cool to see native Bitcoin become a reality and someone that's building on the front lines there to have their perspective on things, as well as someone that cares what's going on, especially here in the States. This is a good episode. I think many of you are going to enjoy it. So yeah, but before we get started, make sure you go ahead, hit that bell button, subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, give us a like, follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, X, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22. And let's get the flywheel spinning. Everybody, welcome to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Thad, the founder of El Dorado, which is a cross-chain lending market. Oh, no, it's a cross-chain swap, my bad. It's a cross-chain swap, and he's been deep in the cross-chain trenches, as well as, had some commentary on Trump's DeFi protocol and his crypto ambitions and what it means for us in the future. So, Thad, thank you so much for coming on to Flywheel.
What is going on, Dave? GM from my part of the world. It has been, I don't know, man. I feel like I'm describing it to people as we're on a ski jump, one of those huge Olympic ski jumps. And we are on the freaking last speed gathering arc of it. And I think we're about to launch. And I think that we are going to look back in 20 years at the fall of 2024 as DeFi people, as people just living through political and economic history. This is an enormous time, and I keep trying to blink my eyes and look around and be like, guys, is anyone else watching how big this could be if all of the things align? And that ranges from the election to liquidity conditions to, in the US especially, that leads the world, kind of the return of economic optimism, which is not nothing, just confidence in markets and that maybe the system isn't going to continue inflating its currency away. So super exciting time to be here, and it's almost like I want to be having this conversation not about the week in, week out, did you hear about the Chinese knockoff of this meme token, but more like, I think this might be it. This might be the big one, guys. And I know
this could be the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the two things you said, the election and liquidity conditions. Let's break down those two. But first, the election. So obviously, we have Trump versus Harris. One candidate has a DeFi protocol coming out. The other is saying, well, what did they just come out with? We need to protect cryptocurrency for black men. It sounded the ChatGPT of what kind of statement will make crypto people kind of okay, but also pander to Kamala's base. And what are your thoughts on the election right now?
Yeah. So, what's fun about this is I run a number of Twitter accounts. I run a number of circles, and it began shaping up this spring, and I actually, not to flex, but I know people close to the Trump campaign and behind the scenes in sort of conservative politics in America. I'm plugged into some of those circles, largely through cracking jokes, and I've written some political articles as well through my personal Twitter. So I heard when Vivek dropped from the race specifically that he was immediately approached by the Trump campaign to be an advisor. And it was just like, hey, man, you went out there, you said a lot of truth. You're good. We like you. Hop on board. And then the surprise of that was that when he got on board or whatever as the advisor, that one of his chief issues that Vivek didn't even talk about really in the campaign was, yo, Trump, you need to become the crypto candidate. I have no way of proving that. That is what I heard behind the scenes. RFK as well. But through this spring, what you saw was a warming of Trump to crypto. And the overblown Trump was anti-crypto. I can summarize that for you. At one point, he was asked about crypto and he said, I love the dollar. I believe in the dollar, blah, 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 whatever's good for the dollar. He didn't make a point about crypto. He's like, I'm not sure about these crypto things. I love the dollar. Anyways, that was years ago. So now we have a candidate who is up and coming who for many of the reasons that you like, and I do think this is like the nature of democracy, right? Goes out to his constituents and to people in the world and says, okay, like what do you guys want? And guess what people want? 20 to 30% of Americans have interacted with blockchains in some capacity. And beyond that, and I can give you kind of his story on it from this World Liberty Fi space, but he said his sons got him into it. And it's such a, he gives it in such a boomer way. It's actually quite endearing. He talks for 45 minutes on the World Liberty Fi space, but he kind of has the humility of like, hey, like I don't totally get this. My boys, they're really into it. And you know, like whatever, they're smart guys and like whatever they're really into, like this makes sense. So he looked into it more. And as this has gotten play and become a popular issue, what's amazing about the current state, so sorry, you asked about the election generally. I'll just say one last thing on the crypto issue with Trump. This is the election where crypto has become and is becoming a win, what you could call it a win-win issue or a lose-lose issue, right? So being pro-crypto is part of the future. It's very popular. It's going to only be more popular over time. And you do not gain a single vote by being anti-crypto. That's what this is about. Is like, you do not, like there is no benefit to you for being like, you know, the Liz Warren, like, you know, capitalism bad, other than maybe some like very long tail, just like vengeful people who hate wealth creation. There's maybe like some of those, but in terms of actual voter blocks, this is a popular issue and a winning issue. So the Trump campaign tested the waters in the spring. I think it was because of this advice of Vivek. They started ramping in, and someone described this, I love this. If you watch Trump's Bitcoin Nashville talk, someone described it as he's saying the things and he'd been, you know, loaded well. And if you listen to him too, people say he doesn't really get it. He is being informed well. He talks about things like, and he pronounces things carefully when he knows they're important, like the right to self-custody. Like he says that, he enunciates it. And he knows, like the right
self-custody. Self-custody.
Yes, no, yeah. So you have the warming of it. And people said this about his Bitcoin Nashville talk. It's like he was watching. It's like he was speaking and in real time seeing the crowd respond. It's like he was like, yeah, this is awesome. Like he was like getting on board.
I feel like even outside of crypto, that's what Trump has done so well over the years is he's just A/B tests. That's what he does, whether it's like online or in real life. He'll like say something, he'll like, you know, gauge your reaction, and then it'll be, or if he's like with anything really. He's really good at A/B testing.
Totally. So zooming up, you kind of asked just about the election generally. So zooming up to the present, we have a race that to me at least is not appearing terribly close. But like I really do think Trump's going to win pretty resoundingly. I don't know about winning the popular vote, but
yeah,
maybe I'm wrong. It would appear right now things are really going. And hey, man, we're in the crypto game. We know how patterns go. And so you look at that poly market pattern, the diverging odds, and you have to say, okay, barring a trend reversal, right? Some bullish catalyst in the Harris camp, barring a trend reversal, this is where we're going. We're going apart and the Trump odds are going up. Yeah, Tucker Carlson's been doing some interesting podcasts and kind of talks with pollsters and people like that. And just I was listening to all the latest and it's like, I get it. I get the people who are like, well, what if it's sketchy or like it? I get like those sort of gray swan arguments. But frankly, right now, according to their metrics that favor them, this is looking bad. Tim Walz sent out a email to supporters last night that said like, I've given a lot of pep talks and I'm going to be honest, like it's the fourth quarter and we're down by a field goal. That's how he framed this election.
Like, wow. That's bad. Like to say that.
Yeah. We're down by a field goal.
I feel like the Harris campaign had like momentum when they were started off the bat, when they made that change, and they have not been able to keep that momentum going.
Totally. And they took the bait. So they took the bait, which was, hey, you're not doing any interviews because you suck at interviews. And they were like, yeah, we'll do interviews. And now they started doing interviews. Guess what? Maybe there was a reason to begin with that people didn't have her doing interviews. Like her people, her campaign did not have her doing interviews. It's kind of like the Biden 2020 strategy. Like, hey, this guy's like maybe not super sharp and let's just keep him in the basement and blame COVID. And this time it was like, so the bad rep of, hey, you're not doing interviews has now been replaced with, hey, you're doing interviews and you are bad at them and people do not like you. And so the problem is they took the bait and now they're like, oh, we'll show you her all the time. We'll give you as many interviews. They tried to do that. And it would appear, if we look at like the polls, literally, at the point where she started doing more interviews, her polling has all gone down. Mm-hmm. So now she's talking like, oh, maybe go on Joe Rogan or something. And it's like, she did an interview
with Call Her Daddy.
Yes. Call Her Daddy, you know, friendly audiences. Really crazy from yesterday. Time magazine did a cover that's basically just like calling her out on how she refused to do an interview with them. It's like a brutal bright red cover of just like, we asked her to do an interview and she said no, even though Biden and Trump said yes to us. It's like a salty, but the whole cover is just like saying,
damn.
So in any case, those odds are diverging. I don't think it is close. And also the polls just, it's not like, oh, we can't, people, the left have now turned the conversation into, we just can't trust the polls. And it's like, no, the polls just consistently oversample your side. Like it's not like an equal, sometimes the polls are really strong in favor of the left. No, it's like the polls consistently favor.
I have another question actually. With the election in general, outside of crypto, what do you think are the biggest issues in the election?
Well, I don't have to think because it's inflation and the economy.
Yeah.
So this is the funny thing about all of this and just politics generally is like, okay, polls on who will win, hard to trust. Polls you can trust, the freaking Pew Research poll, it's been out, they've been doing it for a year since the fall of 23 of what is your top issue? Mm-hmm. That's literally the top, like they do that poll and that's a pretty reliable poll. And I think number one and two are inflation and inflation, economy, immigration. And what's really funny is, you know, it's like 12 is abortion and like 9 is the environment. But you get this interesting thing of, prioritizing things. And maybe your party isn't all about like people having economic prosperity. I really think this is a broader philosophical point, but like the vibe is that this election and increasingly the political conversation is like between like the do's and the don'ts and like people who favor ambition and kind of the American ambitious spirit and people who are ashamed of that or against that and or are, you know, on government benefits or beneficiaries of a system in which they don't pay taxes. And it's really going to get pretty stark because you have, when I say people not paying taxes and people benefiting from the system, that's low productive people. It's also old people. And it's also kind of these aging boomers who came up in the 60s and like the kind of the liberal bloc tends to be old people, minorities, and single women. But in any case, I forget your original question from that.
I was like, you basically answered it. Like, what do you think are the most pressing issues? So it's inflation, economy, and immigration.
Inflation and economy. I mean, like, dude, if you go to Trueflation, the Trueflation marker for like, it's so whack. People don't understand that like the government, and they partially admitted to this, they started to remove variables from their inflation calculation to bake their numbers. Like the inflation number, even the one that they admit to that's really bad, is a lie. Like they baked that number. I'm just a real dude living in the real world. Like I know that my costs for living are up like 40%.
Yeah.
Trueflation, which is Balaji's third party inflation tracker, trueflation.com or whatever, it says it's like somewhere between 25 and 30% over since 2020. All depends how you calculate that. But like, I just look at this and it's like, I'm not in poverty. I do pretty well in crypto. I have some money, but it's like, is everyone not free? The fact that no one's freaking out more about how unaffordable the cost of living is just based on, you know, we are living under an administration that passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and it was like the largest spending bill in the history of human civilization. And we got 30 to 40% inflation in 4 years, and we're in a debt spiral. So I look at that and I'm just like, even I, you know, I'm a plugged in freaking macroeconomics guy. I watch charts. I'm looking at all that stuff. So that's all very real to me from this perspective of like how fast the debt grows. But that's like, I don't want to call it like, that's like the higher IQ side of like the problem, but just freaking man, grocery prices should radicalize you. Like they should radicalize you. And I have that experience where I'm like, this is things are wrong in this country and in this system. And I can't trust the government to run the economy because they're screwing it up. So inflation in the economy. And I think immigration plays into inflation and the economy. This was so stupid in the vice president debate where it was like, well, you know, if you take 25 million people and add them to the country, they all need housing and that's going to drive the price up. And the moderators fact checked him like, well, we don't know if that's true. It's like, no. Remember fractions in elementary school, numerator, denominator, this amount of houses with X amount of people. Now we're going to add, and here's what the number is. It's 7.8% of our population. They added 7.8% to the U.S. population. That's 25 mil out of 333 mil. There were X amount of houses, and then we increased the supply of people by 7.5%, most of which were not born in this country and are getting housing subsidies through all these kind of like illegal support networks. So you do that and it's like, okay, housing's really bad. And then just general inflation in the economy and the American workers' ability to have and keep and sustain profitable work and be able to pay for their groceries. Throw that into the equation. Hey, guess what, labor pool? Plus 7.5%. And they're willing to work for less. Like, so I could go on about that. But in terms of top issues, you asked what I think the top issues are. I know the top issues are inflation and immigration. And how that plays out, you know, inflation and the economy. Those are like the same thing. So we're going to see.
There's a direct correlation with crypto there.
I mean, I can give you my bull case for what happens next.
Yeah, let's hear the bull case.
All right, man. And this is on several levels, right? Because there's the bull case for why it's good for us, crypto guys. And then there's the bull case why it's good for everybody. And here's what I think. Trump wins in a resounding landslide. And there's going to be some bitterness about that. Someone who went on Tucker called it. He goes, I think there's going to be a mental health crisis. Like people are not going to be able to grasp that this could happen. That aside, he's going to get in. We are going to apply tariffs. Trump had a great line yesterday. Tariff is the most beautiful word in the dictionary.
Great. Tariffs.
Tariffs. Beautiful word. So Trump gets into office, brings on some of his private sector advisors. They start cutting costs. They stop printing money. And I think there could be some pretty radical. They could make some hay with, hey, here's a wild thing. We're going to start like firing government employees. We're going to start downsizing the government. We're going to start spending less. And we're not going to pass these huge spending boondoggles. And if, you know, there's some radical ideas like, hey, if Montana wants to build a huge grid of electric charger stations, we don't. We can fund that, right? We can figure that out. If Texas wants to build solar fields, they can do that. Instead of taking our money to the federal government and just wasting it on these projects that never produce anything, like Kamala was supposed to hook up, you know, all of America to broadband or to whatever the internet project was and just failed totally and didn't connect a single person, spent billions of dollars. Like the amount of laughable, what's amazing about this country consistently is you go to the rest of the world. The fact that life and everything is so good in this country despite the leakage. And the leakage is that our government takes 30% of everyone's money and is still bankrupt. They're bankrupting themselves and they're in an exponential debt spiral. So if we started spending less, printing less, imposing tariffs on foreign goods, and figuring out basically just that, how to get spending under. So here's the thing, because all these huge government spending projects aren't actually doing anything, you would actually be surprised with how little you would miss them if they just stopped happening. Like, what did the Inflation Reduction Act do?
Spend money.
Yeah, but in terms of like the proposed Biden, like, you know, if you were to ask the Biden campaign, like, what did it do? There, like, if you really follow the rabbit hole down to where this money ends up, dude, it's all like corruption and embezzlement. And like, you look at that with PPP loans during freaking COVID and stuff. Like, it's all scams and it's all wasting money and just flushing it out of the system. And all that considered, our life is still really good in this country. We're a very prosperous place. That just speaks, it's a testament to us and our economy, and also just like the wealth, the natural resource wealth of this continent, actually. It's amazing. So let's say you just curb government spending. You begin to downsize the federal government. You begin like gutting the deep state. You place tariffs on imported goods, which is a reasonable, we were originally a tariff nation. And you begin to play with possibly like financial instruments like Bitcoin or stablecoins in order to try to stabilize the currency. I just listed like six things. Those are six things that are not like my ideas. It's not like me being like, man, we have to go do that. No, that's literally what like the Trump-Vance campaign is talking about. Who are Trump and Vance? They're freaking private sector guys. J.D. Vance got elected in like 2023. The dude is, he's 38. He's never been, he's not a politician. So we have a private sector administration coming in. They got Vivek, RFK's all right. He's pretty cool. Like, you know,
I see him at Gold Shim in Venice.
Yeah. Yeah. But so we have all these factors that leave us with potentially coming what we would call fiscal austerity and constricting of spending. All kinds of things that would reduce inflation, boost economic optimism, and everything should be good. All of that said, you asked about liquidity conditions. The problem is we already have all this freaking money out there and they started cutting interest rates. So Trump is getting onto a ship where there's already been a bunch of water that's come in and it's sloshing around. I love the expression. I love to say like liquidity sloshes around. Mm-hmm. And so we've got all of this money and it's getting cheaper now. And, you know, if you think with a couple more like basis point cuts and a Trump, yeah, win, if you think that major institutions aren't going to freaking lever up and buy Bitcoin, which is a non-inflationary asset, like that's what's going to happen. So everyone down to, you know, think about me as the use case. When Amex, my credit card company, offers me like a decently low APR, like personal loan for 50K or something, I'll take that sucker and I'll freaking buy ETH or Bitcoin. That's not what they want you to do with it, but no, I can do that because, you know, that's just like a simple, that's like a microcosm of the broader system, which is,
got it.
Okay, we can borrow money now and we can borrow money and get a better return than the APR. And if that's reasonable, I'm going to just freaking get into things that are not going to inflate, that are going to preserve my value. And so right now, if as interest rates come down, the probability is that people are going to get into smart money or whatever's hot. So AI stocks, it's funny how much of a one-trick pony I am. I couldn't tell you what's up in the stock market these days.
Yeah.
Nah, dude, I got too much stuff to follow. We launched our token this week. I don't have time for that. So things like Bitcoin, things like they're talking about now, like large cap crypto ETFs, which is awesome.
So outside of ETH, so like Sol, yeah, and maybe, yeah, some like Dino coins.
Sol, Rune, like things that are dope. Or not all of them. A lot of them are Dino coins. But anyway, so you get the situation in which the damage has been done. This money has all been flooded and printed out there, and it's sloshing around, and it needs to go somewhere. Historically, in an inflationary environment with interest rates coming down, risk assets pump. So whatever risk assets are today, which would be gold, silver, Bitcoin, tech stocks, AI stocks, those would be kind of the hot ones. Maybe biotech as well, pharma. Mm-hmm. But, money floods into those things because money is cheap and it's everywhere. So I was talking about it kind of from the macro perspective. I personally think that we could start bringing inflation down, and not just bringing inflation down, but like bringing costs down, increasing wages, increasing just the general amount people are getting paid. It's always this game, right, of costs mm-hmm. versus your revenue versus your costs. So can people be making more compared to the cost of living? And all of that in the context of what we are doing in crypto, which is like, dude, like I like to strip crypto down to like the core. Crypto was started around Bitcoin. Bitcoin is an inflation hedge. There it is in a sentence. A lot of other stuff going on, but like Bitcoin's an inflation hedge.
It's a fiat hedge.
Yeah, it's a fiat hedge. It's an anti central banking abuse mechanism. And so when we just look at those premises and you look at our modern conditions and you look at the popularity and like the moving of the tides, it's like, all right, where are people going to go? Where's money going to go? To think that it would go somewhere other than Bitcoin is really hard to imagine, actually. So the goal is, and what I think of with our platform, so we're a cross-chain DEX, you can get yields on our platform, you can do swaps. We have a fun meme token. If you own our meme token, you just
El Dorito. You guys Dorito, just launched. Yeah.
So we got Dorito, the gold chip. We have DGen lore behind that we're rolling out, but that launched Monday. And it's just simply, we're a cross-chain DEX. You can get all these L1 tokens. You can trade fast and easily. You can track your portfolio. You can get yield. You can get like 2% APR on Bitcoin on our site. Single-sided asset yield too. That's not like an LP. Not going to plug us too hard. But our thing is, what are we doing? I always say to people, and I wrote a Substack this week or last week called Get In on Crypto Before Trump Gets Elected or Regret It for the Rest of Your Life. And I wrote it for my normie friends and my Twitter followers. And the major premise there is this is your last shot if you're like really not in on it yet. And for us, I describe what we're building at Eldorado and with Dorito as building a financial ark. And like Noah saw the rains were coming, God told him, and he started building an ark. And he was an ark builder. He probably spent most of his life building that ark. And when he was done, and I'm just, embellishing the story myself, but when he was done, hypothetically, anyone can fit on an ark, right? It's just a thing that floats. Anybody could fit on an ark. I wrote that article for my Substack audience and, largely my kind of like right of center following who have my politics because I want my people on the ark. If I'm an ark builder, I want my people on the ark and I want to choose those people. And, so what we have is increasingly, and I just consider myself as farther down the curve than other people. Like I manage my net worth on Eldorado and I use our little on and off ramp. We have an on and off ramp. I use our on and off ramp to shoot some money to my bank account when I need to pay my rent or my credit card bills. That's my life. That's my financial life. Like I'm all in. Maybe that's terrible. Maybe that'll wreck me someday, but like, and I'm not being a total retard about it, but, so I am unbanked, essentially, like according to U.S. Bank, I have like single digit thousands of dollars because I'm just constantly shipping in and out of crypto. But so I am managing my portfolio in Bitcoin and other digital assets via Eldorado. And I am largely gaining, most people are losing purchasing power, losing savings, losing their stored time and value over the past 4 years. And I just look at it as like, I just feel so bad for people. I want people to be able to tread water and to build lives. And I always say this also to my kind of like trad, like Twitter community and stuff. I'm like, guys, like, what is this all about? Like, this is mostly about us being able to afford houses to raise families in.
Like, to that's live our lives.
Like, yeah, dude, it's to live your life. It's to, and really like the biggest thing there is like affording a house, raise a family. Like that's the goal. And I'm not part of like the, if Dorito goes to 100 mil, which I do think we're going to hit 50 mil, we're very confident. We're just starting to market it. We kind of rolled it out slow. If Dorito hits 100 mil, you're not going to see me in freaking Dubai. Like you're going to see me here basically living exactly the way I do now, except I'll buy a house. Like that's that's it.
Before we get into Eldorado and Dorito, I wanted to ask one more question about Trump. What does it mean for working in the crypto industry if Trump wins? Because especially for like me, you, a lot of us, like where our livelihoods depend on, are literally working in the industry.
Yeah.
If he wins, it makes our lives so much easier. And if like Kamala wins, it's like, you know what I mean?
Okay, but I have I have a counterpoint on there, a more of a white pill. Here's what I think. And I'm biased towards, or I know I'm self-aware, believing the things that I want to believe because I want them to be true. But here's my take. Trump winning, we stand a chance of being infinitely better, in a better place. Our lives will be easier. The regulatory burden will be less. It'll be more clear. The taxation regime, all those things, incorporation in this country will become more feasible. So that's the bull case. I actually think the Kamala case, the negative case, is just like more of the same. I actually don't think it'll represent, because it's not like she is actually informed and anti-crypto. She's just incompetent and uninformed. So like, as of right now, like I'm a private contractor. I'm self-employed. I'm a private contractor, and I report that way. And if someone were asking me like, what's my job? I'd be like, oh, I do biz dev and socials for El Dorito. So like that's because we, and I get on every month, I get on a call with my representatives in this state. We have something called the Montana Virtual Crypto Happy Hour.
And like, that's so cool.
A couple like state reps get on, and they're like, just like young political guys who are like, hey, this crypto thing's popular. And they get on and we talk about it. And like, it's a question of how can they make good policy. You know, Wyoming has come far in this. You can incorporate a DAO in Wyoming. So individual states are doing interesting stuff. You know, Wyoming DAO law is cool. I think Arkansas is the other state that has that.
Really? Arkansas?
Yeah, something random like that. I believe it's Arkansas. And so it's like some of these states are getting friendly. And just the question is, can you set rules that we can play by? Because, and here's the implicit part, and I don't mean to like Fed post here, but like, if you set rules that we can't play by, we're not going to play by the rules. And so like, why am I not like trying to do some like incorporation in the US through of a company or anything like that? Like, frankly, because it's a total crap show and the US government is suing the top two companies in my industry, Coinbase and Binance, actively suing all the time, and other top dogs. So when somebody's like, oh, why don't you like try to incorporate or like play by the rules? It's like, because the people that tried that have gotten without exception screwed over. Like that is why. And you know, I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm self-employed. I'm a consultant. And so it just becomes this question of like,
so am I.
help me work with you. Cause otherwise I literally say this, on like the Montana happy hour call. I'm just like, guys, I would love to friggin' plant a flag in the ground, have an office downtown here in Montana. I would love to go to the local CompSci department and hire people and just like basically like run a legitimate company in your state. And there are like no avenues for me to do that. And so when you have those, would love to be like that young, like we created jobs, like founded a business here guy. But you got to work with us. And frankly, and this is just the other part that I think the sovereign doesn't understand is like, if you make, they're not used to like people being able to just say like no or escape their regulatory or tax regimes or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, like you have ridiculous rules. Fine. We won't, like, I'm going to go headquarter in the BVIs or I'm going to do X, Y, or Z. Like those are all options and they're readily available. And it's similar to like just the money side. Oh, like you are abusing the responsibility you're supposed to have some management over the finances and the currency of this country. You abused that. And so I'm using a different money. And they're like, you can't do that. And, you know, they closed the gold window and they tried to fight things like this in the past. And now it's like, I'm using other money and you can't do anything about it. And that, that has actually extreme political implications if there are to be bad times ahead. If this country,
what are the implications?
So I wrote another Substack on this about Hobbes's Leviathan and kind of this concept of the state being a monopoly on violence. And in order for a monopoly on violence to be real, this is like classic parenting 101. But if you're going to make a threat, you have to be willing to follow through on the threat. And this happens in geopolitics. This is like parenting, interpersonal relationships. Empty threats break your credibility in a way that you are now no longer taken seriously. And that's even worse. parents who don't punish their kids now know they won't be punished. They now don't have to fear punishment. So my article is about, it's called Balking the Leviathan. Balking, like laughing at. You want to hear some crazy numbers. The IRS audits about 500,000 people a year. Of those 500,000, they pursue cases of around 1,500. Of those 1,500, they actually achieve charges against a couple hundred people a year. That is the IRS working at maximum capacity, demanding more agents and funding all the time, right? The whole 87,000 new IRS agents that Biden wanted. That's maxed out IRS audits 500,000 people a year. So when we talk about, this is like my normie party conversation, when they go, what if they make crypto illegal? And I go, so if you make something illegal that 30 million people do, I like to compare it to, like, that'd be like setting a federally mandated nationwide 35 mile an hour speed limit. And people would be like, sorry, like, what are you going to do? You have enough cops? And the answer is no. So this came up. I wrote the article because someone was posting about that the FBI has a red list of 400,000 people they're going to arrest if civil war breaks, whatever. Even if that's fake, the person just went down the rabbit hole and goes, oh, 400,000? How many agents do you have? How many people can you arrest today? And basically it's like, oh, you can't arrest 400,000 people. Our country, we can't do that. Even like, you know, they'd have to do some unprecedented engagement of the military. So his point was about like literal unrest and the FBI red list. I then took that because I knew these numbers because it fascinated me and I looked all of them up before. The IRS reports. So I was like, oh, do you know how that works with like tax crime? For example, if a bunch of people decided to stop paying taxes, our government would be totally incapable of enforcing it. And let's not forget, like, the American Revolution was a tax revolution. It was a 3% tax on tea, I believe, in Boston. Boston Tea Party. And the Stamp Act. And I'm actually reading a book on the revolution right now. But so you have this situation. My joking like headline is, they say Trump is like the greatest threat to democracy since the Civil War. And he's not. A Facebook group with 10 million people in it called MAGA Moms for Not Paying Taxes would actually be a bigger threat. Because at 10 mil is not a lot of our population. And that is, 10 mil is 3% of our population. And like, you get 10 mil people to be like, hey, and then somebody was, this isn't Fed posting because this is real, but like, somebody was like, yeah, so change from a W-2 to a W-4 and set your withholding to zero. That's how you stop paying federal taxes. And it's basically like, I'll pay federal taxes later, and then you just don't do it. And somebody was like, you know, not me, I would never do this, but somebody was like, yeah, let's just like, until I'm okay with what the government's doing, people en masse should withhold their federal taxes. Those things haven't been organized well, or really spread, but realize, and this is the part where I'm like, hey, there's something here. If there was a mechanism to do that kind of thing and still have money and engage in commerce and basically opt out of the system, the mechanism would be crypto. And so I don't want to like threaten it as like, hey, like you better watch out. But if the government abuses its mandate with the people too much, crypto is a mechanism that could be used for rebellion or to, you know, just, I call it tax rebellion. But in my vision for the future of the country, it is possible we see a long, slow breakup of the country. And one of the, especially during economic turmoil times, one of the historical signals or things that happens when you have a long, slow breakup is regional currencies. So in the late Roman Empire, you can actually track the decline of the Roman Empire by percentage of silver in the denarii. So they literally diluted the amount of silver in there and added bronze. They added like other metals. And then by the end, it was basically like an iron with a little silver.
You can see that in the weight.
Yeah. So they diluted it. And you can literally follow the decline of the Roman Empire by them diluting their currency. So this got so bad that they were like, you know, a lot of these regions were just like, what was a Roman province? It was a bunch of soldiers and some leadership in a region that got money from the state to like run their operation. And at a certain point of breakdown, those regions with an army and with like a leadership structure were like, all right, like basically the coins that were being sent by the state or like the whole system, it just doesn't, we need a new currency. So I've always said like a big catalyst in a slow breakup of the US would be like Texas coin. And I literally just mean they should call it the Lone Star Dollar. That's good.
The phrase. Lone Star Dollar.
The Lone Star Dollar would just be a freaking stable coin that they pegged to. They'd probably like back it with oil or something. And oil, oh, that's sexy. Oil backed dollar. And it's just like, oh, the Texas Lone Star. Like, oh, yeah, like now the US dollar. Oh, 2 years later, the Texas Lone Star is worth one and the US dollar is worth 0.85. And it's like, all right, yeah, you're going to have to convert that currency when you go to freaking Michigan. But regional currencies, that's not violence. That's just the people in Texas saying like, hey, like based on our productive capacity, we can keep a stable currency. We don't have to inflate. And we're going to use crypto to track something that stores value. You know,
so the regional stable coins, basically, and they're regional stable coins. Oil, Bitcoin, and whatever else is out there.
Yeah. And like, you know, that's one possibility. You have to think about it with the Texas. I used to live in Texas. Texas is a net exporter and producer of food, energy, and tax dollars. So if you think about, does a place consume more than it? You got to think about like taxation and like government stuff as like redistribution of wealth. Texas is net taken from by the state and does not get that back in benefits or any sort of like spending. I don't know, man. If I was Texas, I'd be pretty pissed about that. Like we literally
and
don't
they have their wealth. Own energy grid.
Yeah, we have our own energy grid. So on a long enough time scale, it'd be like, and so California is also that way. It's a net producer. Mm-hmm. And with those big ones, it's like, all right, so we're in this federal system. We're under this currency. The federal system is breaking the currency. And I'm not like advising for this. I just try to like game out like what could this look like. Loss of confidence in the dollar and taxation rebellion. That's literally like people think about it as like, oh, we're gonna meet in the streets and have like battles. And it's like, no, man, like most political breakups and revolts and stuff are taxation based. The Soviet Union largely fell because the system wasn't working and they wanted a better economic system. And actually, the entire country fell peacefully, which is amazing.
That is amazing to think about.
Yeah, that was the other side of the Cold War. And now we built ourselves up in dialectic in opposition to the Soviet Union. And now there's no – I kind of hate to think of it this way, but like we built ourselves up so much in opposition to communism as like the West that like once they fell, now we like don't have a reason to exist.
It's like the other gives us an identity.
Yes, exactly that. The other gives us our identity. And now we're like,
Before it was like terrorism, like blah, blah, blah. And then after that, now it's China, blah, blah, blah. Like we're trying to find that like other, but like nothing really matched the kind of like the size, scope, scale, and power of the Soviet Union and the influence that they had in the world. Not even China right now.
And think about setting precedent of like, you know, if you look at our freaking our military spending versus every country on earth combined, right? It's crazy. Under the Cold War, I always think about this. I wasn't alive during the Cold War. I think about this. I'm like, wouldn't that have been scary? Just like freaking getting nuked, my country being nuked by the other major superpower on earth. I would have been like worried about that all the time. And if the government said like, hey, we got to take freaking a crazy percentage of our national budget and spend it on crazy weapons, I'd be like, yeah, let's do that. Let's freaking win. And now, I forget the way it's been phrased, but like, it's like we got this dog that hunts and it's our military industrial complex and it uses tons of our money and that we can't just like turn that into a house dog. That dog needs to hunt. And so I think the way I've heard it put is like, absent a real enemy, we started looking for them or making them up.
So like literally, that's literally what happened.
Like Saddam, like why did we go into Iraq? Like people, it's crazy. You want to hear a crazy stat? And this is like our media colluding with our government and all the freaking the ugliness. In 2003, 73% of Americans thought Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11.
That's 73% really misinformed.
So when our government was like, we're going into Iraq, everyone was like, 9/11, bad. And it was like, dude, like Like, and it looks even worse the farther we get from that, that we're like, wait, that had nothing to do with 9/11 at all. And we just invaded a sovereign country on the opposite side of the planet because reasons. And like, what's just crazy is, yeah, we, what's so scary about that. And I would hope that in the age of the internet and some amount of ability to like share real information, that that wouldn't happen again. They couldn't get us to believe 75% of whatever, believe that Saddam was connected to 9/11. But, actually it's interesting. Go to the 9/11, this is Wikipedia read. Go to the invasion of Iraq and read the section on like connection to Saddam Hussein. And it's like really reaching. It's like, I mean, Dick Cheney made like offhand statements implying it, but never actually said it, and just relied on the American people to be like, yeah, Middle East, 9/11, bad. And like literally we freaking thousands of Americans died in that country for no reason. Anyways, we've gone kind of
Let's bring it back up to El Dorado.
Yeah.
So El Dorado, give us like a bit of an overview on it. Why did you decide to start building it? What opportunity you see there? Go ahead.
There we go. All right, El Dorado. Here's what we got. So I've been working in and around ThorChain, which is a cross-chain liquidity technology fundamentally, for the last coming up on 4 years. It's like 2020, 2021. I was around that space. I actually personally helped broker some of the first conversations between Maya Protocol and ThorChain. I just happened to be the first one the Maya people found around ThorChain and connected them with JP, the ThorChain founder, and we had some calls. Maya is a friendly fork of ThorChain. But fundamentally, years later, I was in a position between ThorChain and Maya and all this kind of cross-chain tech and having a pretty good network to found my own interface. And so I wanted to create a Maya native DEX. Maya is a fork of ThorChain. The way to think about it is they're both shiny technology for getting between chains. ThorChain at the time was offering what I call like this menu of chains. And Maya is a friendly fork that has some different technical details. They kind of built their system differently. Their liquidity ratios, how they do nodes, there's some differences. And Maya, so ThorChain has this menu of chains. Maya offers this different menu. And so we decided to be this cross-chain interface on Maya. And then over time, we expanded into ThorChain as well. So you could think of it like we are this front end, and feeding into the back of our front end are multiple back ends. So we have ThorChain, Chainflip, and Maya. And between those three, in addition to, we have DEX aggregation. So on our platform, we are a cross-chain DEX. And people don't realize you can do this. I sometimes say, just think cross-chain 1-inch. On our platform, you can get from native Bitcoin to Solana, to Ethereum. You could go in a couple transactions. Sometimes you have to make an intermediary swap because it's a matter of like which ones connect where. But fundamentally, on our platform, on a DEX, you don't have to log in. You don't have to trust a centralized exchange. You can get from native Bitcoin to a Solana meme coin in like two transactions. Or you can go, direct cross-chain, ETH to ARB to Bitcoin, all of those things, Kakao to Rune. So we have all this cross-chain functionality, and fundamentally, I like to bring it back to the basics. I like to not overcomplicate it. What are we? Like, we're basically some mixture between most products in crypto are like a bank or a trading platform. So we are a bank and trading platform, and we have been called El Dorado for the last, we've been running since April of 23, and that was the city of gold. Maya Protocol was very kind of Central America themed. We made physical gold coins. We like did all this cool stuff. And then the big week you're speaking to me in is the week of our token launch. We waited 2 years to launch our token. And we decided to do something pretty degenerate. And it's basically to launch a totally degen, sort of pump fun spirited meme token called Dorito. And so El Dorito.
The golden chip.
The gold chip. The world's first gold chip asset, baby. So now with Dorito, we have a meme token. Now, that might seem funny or odd, and the question is, what is it? So, in a nutshell, other platforms like ours that we're competing with are in a race to the bottom on fees, and we decided to opt out of that race to the bottom by moving to a membership model. So like, I was like, let's go Web2 SaaS model membership. So we needed something that allows people to be members of our site and get feeless swapping, feeless LPing, feeless everything. What did that involve? For the most part, it's like we needed to launch a token with actual utility, and the utility is being a member of our membership platform. So instead of, so I always say this, we could have launched this as a really boring, we could have called it Eldo. People wanted us to call it Eldo or Dorado and just have it be like, well, we are a DeFi protocol called El Dorado and here's our token. And just like nothing fun, nothing special. That was option one. Option two was to launch like a totally unrelated, ridiculous meme that has memetic potential. It has viral potential. It has both niche appeal and widespread applicability. I've always said that for memes, they need to be like niche appealing to get hardcore early believers on, but also they need to be not an inside joke enough that the masses could potentially internalize them. So we launched Dorito, which is our meme token. Everyone loves Doritos. You will never meet someone who says they hate Doritos. You'll meet some people who say they don't eat them, but Dorito is the gold chip asset. We say it's gold chip because it's meme-tility. It is a meme. It also has real utility.
Meme-tility.
Yes.
I like that.
So holding our token, and the other part two, we're stripping out the complexity. Holding our token. You do not need to stake it. You do not need to do anything fancy or lock it. When you connect your wallet to El Dorito or El Dorado Dex, we are reading your wallet. And if you have 3,333 tokens, which is about $500 right now, it's actually lower. We're lower today. So you can buy this membership and the price of membership fluctuates. But fundamentally, our token is to mediate membership. And we don't like how obscure crypto language can be. People talk about it in all these stupid language. A freaking membership, man. Call it what it is. And so we're a membership. You get feeless swapping. That might seem trivial. We have a lot of people who are using these cross-chain interfaces and paying thousands of dollars in fees. One of the sneaky marketing things that I'm about to do with my devs is we're going to build a calculator. You remember fees.wtf? You ever use that?
Yeah.
We're going to build fees.wtf for cross-chain. And then I'm going to get meme with it. I'm going to have that fees.wtf take the amount you spent in fees. And you have to make some assumptions in here, but I'm kind of a spreadsheets and projections guy. All right. Let's say you paid $1,000 or $3,000 in fees in 2024 on your swaps. We are then going to figure out what we are going to do some projections on what $5,000 in fees in Bitcoin could be worth in 2060, assuming X, Y, or Z conditions. So like having people realize, no, you didn't just lose $3,000 this year. It's opportunity cost on what that crypto could have been in 40 years. And that is non-trivial. So you could either pay thousands of dollars a year in fees, and really like the really hard one is to think like, what if Bitcoin is at $1 million, do you know how much that fee is going to be worth? And it's like, you lost a year's salary in fees in 2024. That's what's at risk by losing small fractions of your bag. Versus right now in our, like the first, we launched on Monday, it's Wednesday, buying a $300, $400, or $500 membership with our tokens that just whitelists your wallet. We're talking, just so you know, like you can do a Bitcoin swap with $500,000 to ETH, like straight cross-chain swap on a DEX with like $1,000 of slippage or less. It's crazy. Wow. The efficiency that we've gotten. I think I was looking at it. I queued up a swap that was $243,000 of Bitcoin for ETH, and it would come out with 243, and it would be like 242, like lose $1,000 in slippage on a swap that big. And people are like, oh, like why doesn't One Inch do this? And it's like, oh, well, they're not cross chain, or why doesn't this exist before? And it's like, ThorChain and Maya, for the most part, and Chainflip invented this technology. People don't know it's possible yet, but straight up, like, go to eldorado.market. We've like temporarily or maybe permanently rebranded to El Dorito. So right now our URL is eldorito.club, eldorito.club. Yeah. But you go to our decks and like go queue up like if you have these bags or if you one day will have them, like go queue up like a $400,000 swap. Those are the rates we can give you. And the only missing variable, and this is us trying to build the product we want for ourselves. the missing variable in what we could offer was it was too expensive on fees. We fixed the slippage. Slippage is low. We were like, okay, fees suck. And they suck. And all of our competitors are applying fees. We are applying fees. We're all the bad guy. Let's move to membership model. And it's kind of it's a sacrifice fly a little bit. Like, we gave up with a membership, you give up your revenue model, you give up your fees. And so if our token doesn't get bought enough and doesn't get used enough, you know, we have to rethink what we're doing. But as of right now, it's looking good. Our token launch went pretty well. Like, we're slow building this. We did not advertise we were doing it on Monday until Monday morning. As in,
a stealth launch.
Yeah. So we like totally stealth launched it. And so everybody getting in this week and not trying to say buy our token, but like everyone getting in early, it's basically an open secret, but only to people who like know about it. So like, not very many know about it right now. And that's fine because we're slow building this.
So it's like a bet on the membership model. It's like, hey, like more people are going to want this membership because this is one of the, if not the only place where you can do cross chain native Bitcoin swaps.
Yeah. And like, so 3,333 tokens is a membership. Our supply is 33.33. Everything is three and three, and it's triangles. It's the gold chip. It's the temple. We're writing all this lore together, but the gold chip asset, so 3,333. If you bought one of those memberships, sweet. You're doing like feeless cool stuff on our platform and portfolio managing and getting, you know, the yields and the swaps. It's all great. If you decided to buy five memberships, or if you bought, I think it's, you know, like 20K tokens, you own five or six memberships. The assumption is that later on, those are going to be very valuable. And so what we have done with a lot of our treasury, rather than think about it like we are buying our own token, we bought a lot of this token off the open market. And we own a lot of it at a low valuation because, A, I mean, we're not some meme, like random pump fund meme. Like, we are a legitimate protocol. We're sticking around. We're building. Like, we're not rugging. But we bought a lot of these, not out of the sake of like, we're going to wash trade the token. More like, this is the supply of our memberships. And when we like airdrop or send people tokens, it's actually not about sending them tokens for trading. It's like, no, we're sending bundles and multiples of 3,333 because those represent memberships. And like, there are people, there are whales that this is going to save like tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's actually quite non-trivial. So we think of it like a membership model, and as an interesting nod back to the past cycle, little napkin math, 3,333 to 33.3 mil. And it's 10,000 slices. There are 10,000 memberships, okay, like an NFT set. Now, we own most of them. So there are not 10,000. Like, the problem with NFTs is that most of them are out there floating around and the price tanks. We own a lot of them. And so right now it's at those levels, 3,3. The mechanism we may now implement, which is fun, and this is, again, just fun game theory, is burning memberships. So imagine now, you have to burn your 3,333 in order to become a member. It permanently memberizes your wallet. One, there's aftermarket value there. You could sell your wallet. You could sell like access to your wallet because that's a member wallet. Mm-hmm. So you basically, it's almost like, check this out. It's almost like you minted an NFT, but it's a wallet. So you can memberize your wallet with 3,333. Now,
it's like a soulbound wallet.
Okay, but yes, but our parameters currently are set to membership equals 0.01% of supply, not 3,333 tokens. So you burned 3,333 tokens. The next guy is going to have to burn 3,335. Every person
that burns a membership
becomes deflationary. So burning memberships, and I've done the spreadsheet on this and graphed it, what it does to our supply. Imagine it's like, oh yeah, the first members, they're going to get in cheap and early. And every time they pull up the ladder a little bit, it's going to get a little harder and a little harder. And the question is, do you want to burn those tokens and get a membership while the getting's good? And there becomes kind of a hype behind that. There also becomes deflationary pressure. So we literally become a deflationary token. And we might get degenerate with this. We're like, you know, we have a bunch of treasury Dorito and in bundles of 3,333, right? That's memberships. We might start doing like, oh, for every one membership that gets burned by our community, we burn two and just like burn matching. Anyways, you get into like a very scarce and deflationary token model there. And all of that is just on the utility side before we even mention, like, dude, we have like a full media company basically on our team pushing the Dorito token as like the world's first gold chip asset and like a fun meme. So we have this dual model of like the cross-chain DEX with utility. We have yields also, swapping, low slippage. And then the other side, we have this fun meme token that I like to say, come for one, stay for the other. You might be a person that scoffs at meme tokens and you hate them and you don't care, but you do buy 3,333 of our meme token because you want feeless swapping for cross-chain, which we are the only feeless cross-chain platform via ThorChain or anything like that. We can now market that, which is awesome.
And how does, I'll let you finish. I was going to ask like how ThorChain works and how native Bitcoin swaps work.
In a sec. Yeah. So we have one side of our business model, which is we're a native cross-chain DEX. We can get you between chains, low slippage, high yields, native single asset yield on Bitcoin. So that's all really awesome. And then on the other side, we have this meme token. And there will be people, I always say, from the DEX who don't like memes, who buy the meme because they want the membership. There will also be meme degenerates who don't care about cross-chain at all, who start to manage their Solana portfolio on Eldorado or El Dorito, because El Dorito is a great platform and we've branded it as Crypto's Country Club. So like when you log in with Dorito tokens, you get a gold card in the upper right hand corner and this gold flutter effect happens on the screen and there's chicks and like it's all cool and aesthetic. It's like it's a high dopamine experience. So meme people will become DeFi users through El Dorito and cross-chain people might buy memes. And so we are bridging these gaps. And the problem is ThorChain and that whole world is pretty insular and can be pretty siloed off. So we're trying to like bring meme people into ThorChain and bring ThorChain people a meme. So that's our vision. And it's kind of this bifurcation of our model. It's like we've added a new branch to our business.
It's kind of like you're baking a cake and like you're adding all these different elements, Bitcoin, memes, cross-chain shop.
Yes.
Yeah. And like together,
just as a small detail, upside, downside risk, right? On the upside, so if our meme, Dorito, world's first gold chip asset, totally fails, right? It's still a useful utility token. Like it still has a real freaking value on it. And actually, we would argue there's a price floor there. And so there's the downside potential is very low. The upside potential is huge, as we all know. If the meme takes off, if it does well, if we market it well, so we consider this a best case scenario, big win, worst case scenario, just like mid. And we're pretty happy about that.
And
you asked about ThorChain.
Yeah. Cause I remember hearing about ThorChain back in 2020, and it had its run up back then. But then I remember there was like a few hacks here and there. But it seems like they, you know, recovered and came back, and not only just came back, but they're thriving and they're working.
Yeah. So basically, trying to think in a nutshell, ThorChain is a, CosmoWasm, like it's basically a fast, shiny asset that allows you to create liquidity pools between chains. So if you think about the ThorChain system, you have your ETH pool, your Bitcoin pool, your Litecoin pool, whatever the various chains are, they're all paired one-to-one in a liquidity pool with Rune. And Rune is able to calculate what the prices are. And essentially you are routing through Rune when you go between chains. That is an ultra normie understand. Just like that.
Rune is like, it kind of reminds me of Bancor a little bit when like everything went through Bancor and like that old model.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with that model, but at the end of the day, it's just built. The big question with a system like that is it needs to have its own liquidity and it needs to have very deep liquidity.
Yeah.
And the really, really big developments that it's had in the last, let's say, like a couple of years that have really turned the tides is, yes, the liquidity has gotten really deep, but they implemented something called streaming swaps. And people used to ask me, like, why is it everyone using ThorChain? And my answer was always that I would send ThorChain to my whale buddy and he would just say, sorry, bro, like the slippage is too bad. Like I can't, I trade hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time. Like I can't do this. Streaming swaps was an innovation by ThorChain that allows you to for lack of better phrasing, like split up a swap over time.
Okay.
So you send your swap and let's say it's $500,000 and Thorchain's like, oh, that's a big swap. We're going to spread it out over 4 hours or 6 hours, whatever.
So it's a TWAM.
I'm not totally sure, but it sacrifices time a little bit and it's not even super bad, but it literally breaks up the swaps in a way where you can do, imagine this, you can do a trade that is larger than the total liquidity in the pool you're going through.
Got it.
As in like there could be 400K in the USDC Rune pool and you could do a 500K swap. So it's like basically they broke the inefficiencies of the DEX model and just figured it out. And it just required like sacrificing on time a little bit. These are not super, streaming swaps don't always take long. For most swaps, it's a few minutes, under an hour. The really big ones, you know, people have done streaming swaps for like 7 mil before.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think those took 10 or 12 hours.
Yeah. So it's like a DCA machine. It's like, it like reads the, whatever the swap is. And it's like, okay, we're going to break it down over a few minutes. We're going to break it down over a few hours, days. Yeah. Got it.
Exactly. So, that's kind of how it works. And Maya works similarly. They have various ways that they are, you know, securing capital and operating nodes. And the bottom line is those are both taking off because they figured out the slippage problem. And the slippage problem got solved by streaming swaps.
How long has that been around, the streaming swaps?
March this year.
So it's a recent development.
And so you can look at volumes, like the amount of freaking volume that they are doing through Thorchain and stuff is crazy. And so now what's happening, so we are a front end, right? Thorchain's our back end. You got to choose how you get to Thorchain for these swaps. Thorchain does not operate a front end interface. Thor swap, the classic case. Thor swap is not them. It's a different team. So like we, Eldorado or Eldorito, you know, we're all just interfaces competing. Now here's what started happening with Thorchain. Wallets, big wallets are integrating it on the back end. So when you're on your, you know, the big one they got recently was OKX wallet. All right, you got OKX wallet and you want to do a Bitcoin to ETH swap. You think you're using OKX wallet and it's like, oh, they swap it somehow. Wallets are starting to use Thorchain on the back end. So like the OKX wallet swap is Thorchain. And so increasingly, Thorchain is going to be in the background for more and more of this stuff. And again, it's just kind of a to the biggest player go the spoils question because their liquidity gets deeper. They get more efficient. At this point, if you look at the TVL of Thorchain, like there is not a venture capitalist or nobody could fund a project with enough money to compete with Thorchain on a comparable product. So like they have this escape velocity, which is just like this would be like you can't launch a startup Costco because Costco has economies of scale that you can't touch. Costco is so far ahead of you on scale, you couldn't like boot up a new one to compete with it because they've already run away with the race.
What's the current TVL of Thorchain right now?
That is a good question. Let's look it up. How are we doing on time, by the way?
We'll probably wrap up after this question.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Thorchain TVL. Assets like Rune are good ways to get exposure to that. I mentioned Rune in terms of the potential multi-asset ETFs or whatever that was. Fact check me on that, but this was in the conversation. I know Rune is in the conversation for that. The TVL for Rune is 262 mil.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, no. Staked? So I can't tell. It says the TVL is 262 mil, but it says staked. The staked amount is 560 mil.
Got it. So still nine figures.
Yeah. So, 560 mil, which is, so the liquidity is 256, but total amount 560. So it's a question of like, oh, you want to build a Thorchain competitor with deeper liquidity and like good technology? do you have almost $1 billion?
Yeah. Especially with native Bitcoin. Like that's the real moat there.
Yeah, totally. And like as much as Bitcoiners don't like to appreciate it, if you go to app.eldorado.club/earn and you look at our yields, like I'm just going to look at what like Bitcoin yields are. You know, you really get to see single. And so the other part, sorry, you asked what changed. They figured out streaming swaps that fix slippage. They also figured out what's called savers. Previously, if you wanted yields on Thorchain, you needed to be a two asset LP. So you had to do Bitcoin and Rune. And predictably, what does that mean? Risk of impermanent loss. Rune's price could change. Bitcoin's price could change. So what we have is savers. And savers was just an innovation where, think about it this way, ready? If you're in the Bitcoin Rune pool on Thorchain, previously, you had to be Bitcoin and Rune. Or you could deposit one and they would just on the back end, they would swap it for you. They would swap half into the other asset. So you're still doing a two-side LP. Here's what savers is. Imagine I or you, you come to the table with your Bitcoin and you're like, hey, I don't trust this Rune shitcoin because I'm a Bitcoin maxi. I just want Bitcoin yield. You deposit just your Bitcoin. And I am a little more degen and I'm like, I'm a Rune maxi. I will meet you at the table. Let's make an LP, your Bitcoin, my Rune. But I am taking more risk by filling the other side of that bargain. So I'm going to get more yield than you.
So they're the junior tranche, the junior risky tranche. Yep.
Yes. So I am the degen tranche. I get more yield than you, but you get the pure Bitcoin exposure. And if we both agree that that's like an okay arrangement, then like, cool, that's what we got. So like today, as an example, the Bitcoin APR from app.eldorado.market/earn is the APR from Thorchain is 1.81%, which Bitcoin in a savings account, you know, that might not sound like a lot. 1.81%
for Bitcoin,
you know, yeah, for Bitcoin and do that over 50 years. That's pretty extreme. And that is with no risk of freaking impermanent loss. Now, do you know what the Bitcoin LP is if you do Rune Bitcoin on Thorchain? It's 71%.
71%.
So you want to play the game here. I just sent you, check your Telegram DM. I just sent you, and what's cool, and we're the only interface that does this. If you expand our earn page, you get, basically you get the three columns, and the three columns, the first one is Thorchain, the second column is Maya, and the third is Thorchain Savers. So Savers is the single asset ones. And then the other ones, we call them yield accounts, but they're the two-sided LPs. We're trying to use more like accessible language.
Got it. That's awesome. Yeah, definitely going to check this out after the show. We're coming up on time here. And before we go, I usually ask this question to all our guests. Who do you want to see on Flywheel next? Who would you recommend as a guest?
Next as a guest? Well, if you could get... You know what? There's a guy named Dimitri from RabbitX who is super based and runs a cool perps protocol. And I've always just liked him. Mm-hmm. In terms of people who are at the crossover of kind of my like ideological and Twitter circles, Dimitri might be a good one. I don't know. That might be one of my top choices.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. But Dave, it's been a pleasure talking. I guess we went through the election. We went through potential breakup scenarios in the United States. We went through El Dorado and El Dorito, which is for sale on our site and gives you feeless access to all this cool stuff. That's my final plug.
Yeah, dude. We had it all. We did it all on this one. Thad, thank you so much for coming on.
Bro, I would be happy to do this again sometime if you want to chat any specific topic. If you can't tell, I'm a talker.
No, we love it. This is what this pod is about. Like, I'm just only the shepherd. Like, I'm trying to guide you and like to whatever topic you want to yap about.
Cool, bro. Well, appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Scream me a soul addy. Maybe we'll give you an El Dorado membership.
Oh, yeah. I got you. I'll send you that after the show.
Cool, man. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for watching this episode of Flywheel with GigaThad. I'm your host, DeFi Dave. I hope you all enjoyed it. I sure did. And we'll see you next week. But before we go, make sure you go ahead, hit that bell and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Give us a like on YouTube. Follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, X, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22. And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.